On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, we break down the new NBA schedule. We talk about the Justin Anderson signing, Wilson Chandler out of the bubble, plus breaking news on the podcast, Spencer Dinwiddie has coronavirus. We'll break all that down and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another episode of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your fearless host, Josh Bass, joining me as always in this ever-changing world we find ourselves in. It's Marcus Barahal. What's up, Marcus?
What's up, Josh? A couple fears over here on this end, but not too many, you know, inside, so not much to threaten me right now.
Yeah, and literally as we're starting this, I just got a text from a buddy saying Dinwiddie has coronavirus.
What?
This is pretty crazy. We might need to redo our whole outline.
Yeah, we'll improvise it, I guess. Well, yeah, we should probably start with that, I guess, right?
I guess so. He tweeted an hour ago, so he's still active. But yeah, Shams said he's positive. He has symptoms, and it's creating doubt over his status for the NBA restart.
Okay, that would be big if he is not able to go. Obviously, they have Chris Chioza, I guess, could get some more minutes.
They now have Justin Anderson.
Yeah, Tyler Johnson, I guess, would have to take on like a much bigger role. Obviously, this is all like still TBD because this literally like just happened. But I mean. LeVert would be like really the only guy, and I mean, I don't know. We're gonna talk about the Nets schedule and like how things broke for them and how things broke for like the Magic and the Wizards, but I don't know. Even like I would be very surprised if the Nets still wouldn't get the 8th seed, even without Dinwiddie. I think like their schedule relatively isn't that bad, which we'll talk about, but I mean, I don't know. If like Tyler Johnson took those minutes, obviously that's a worse team, but like I don't think that they necessarily will go that far down overall. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with that. I think the Wizards will also be pretty brutal. I think if Dinwiddie's out, it's pretty tough for the Nets to stave off Orlando for that 17. It will be most likely that they fall back from 8, but you know, they have enough of a cushion right now with 6 games going into this. They have to maintain a 4-game advantage that they could be fine. So the games start a month from tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So he should be okay health-wise. I don't know exactly how the protocols work for getting him down there, because I know players are starting to report. Are players reporting now, or maybe in a few days? Or after
in the next few days, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then, like, even for Dinwiddie, like, are you going to really rush back to then go down to Orlando when you're recovering from this? And I think we're going to see a lot more players having this. It's just, they're like, we'll get into also Wilson Chandler backing out. And I think the bottom line is you cannot blame him in any sense, or really any guy, regardless of what their reason is. With everything going on, it just seems like a pretty big risk, and it might not be worth the reward, especially if you're a team, you know, like the Nets or one of these kind of Western Conference bottom feeders, or Orlando, you know, Wizards, whomever. It's just a lot going on, to say the least.
Yeah. Just regarding that timeline, I'm remembering I have a friend who still works at the NBA who's going to be in Orlando for the bubble, and she just got there like a day or two ago. So I think like organizational people have like started going there now, and then players are supposed to come pretty soon. But yeah, for Dinwiddie, like, the timeline is supposed to be like 14 days, but like, I don't know. I've heard some people with stuff much longer, some people with stuff much shorter. Rudy Gobert was saying earlier today, I think, that he still can't quite smell things fully, which is like one of the later symptoms that you get from the coronavirus. So like, it can have an impact like really long term. Like, it's not necessarily just like 2 weeks and all of a sudden you're good to go. So it's definitely like a play by ear situation. But for Dinwiddie, like, yeah, if like mid-July he's still not like fully over it, then even like to come, like, say he's like July 20th, he's healthy, like even if he went down to Orlando, he'd still need to quarantine for a couple weeks, I'm assuming for 2 weeks. So that would take him through, like, missing the first game, second game, maybe a few games in. So the timeline already is, like, kind of tight where we are right now. Like, if he takes 2 weeks to recover, 2 weeks to quarantine, that's 4 weeks. So I know we're a month away. It's kind of like this is, like, the last moment where it would be, like, up in the air about someone going, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously very unfortunate, more so for his long-term health, not necessarily the next prospects this season, because obviously that's a lot more important. And, you know, he's my favorite player to watch, so
it's
definitely not great. I guess let's get back to our regularly scheduled programming, Marcus.
Sure.
Let's kick it off. As NBA schedules were released, the Nets schedule, and let me just kind of run this down. It starts with playing the Magic, then the Wizards, the Bucks, Celtics, Kings, Clippers, Magic, and Blazers. So pretty Eastern Conference heavy for those first four games, and then playing some of the Western Conference teams that the Nets do not get to face as much in three of those last four. Obviously, key meetings here that I think we all want to circle, those two games against the Magic, so that first one and that penultimate one, and then the second game against the Wizards. These are really kind of the three key ones, given these are the teams they're fighting against. But what are your initial reactions? Because for me, it seemed pretty favorable with those two games against the Magic, the Wizards one, and then the Bucks, that third one. They've already locked up that number one seed, basically. Who knows how much they're going to be trying. And then at the very end, with the Kings and Blazers, you know, it's
they could be eliminated by them.
They could be eliminated. Blazers probably less likely, but Kings actually no. I mean, they're
Blazers' last
right
game
now
of the season. So
yeah, exactly. So it could be that they're eliminated by then. And then the Clippers, it's I mean pretty likely they'll have locked up the two seed, especially you know with Jokic having Corona. It's not sure exactly how Denver is going to be, and they didn't look great towards the end of the season. So it's pretty likely that the Clippers will have the two seed all sewed up by that point also.
Yeah, so I mean, I was completely in agreement with you when I saw the schedule. I saw some people on like Nets Twitter talking about how there's like no real easy wins on this schedule, but I think that's something you could say for pretty much every team outside of like the Milwaukee's and the LA teams that like actually are much better than a lot of these other teams. Like the way that I would look at this is like there's five at least winnable games on this 8-game schedule, like the two Orlando games, Portland, Sacramento, and Washington. Those are all games that I wouldn't say the Nets like are locks to win by any stretch, but those are all games where they should at least be competitive. And if they can even win like 3 out of these 8 games or 4 out of these 8 games, that'll make it tough on Washington to kind of keep pace and compete with them, because like even though this is for the playoffs and the Nets are almost definitely going to be a playoff team, like you have to kind of like understand that they're like one of the worst teams here, like despite yes. their despite their status. So like whoever they're playing, they weren't, unless they had like 8 games against the Suns, like they weren't gonna have that great of a schedule. That being said, like I saw someone kind of compiled everyone's strength of schedule for these 8 games on Twitter. The Nets were 17th out of the 22 teams for in terms of like they have the one of the easier schedules. The Magic were 18th. So, like, not a huge difference between what these two teams are going to have to face. The Magic, at this point, seem like they're going to be more whole. But, like we said, there's a lot of time still before the season does resume. So things could always change in the meantime. But right now, I think they're kind of on an even playing field with the Magic. And I think the Wizards don't have a ton of a chance unless something, like, crazy happens with more injuries or more coronavirus stuff or, like, that stuff plus Beal getting hot is what it would have to take. Also, Josh, wanted to tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. Even during social distancing, everyone is still very busy, and there's an incredible app that makes this a lot easier called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, tablet, web browser, and uniquely gives you the key takeaways and need-to-know information in just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to their massive library of nonfiction books, all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA to try it free for 7 days and get 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off your new subscription.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was thinking about this before during the day, just thinking more so about like the Nets like closing late game situation. And of those three teams at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, you know, like Dinwiddie is, I'd say, gives the Nets the second best late game creator situation with, you know, obviously Beal being kind of at the top. And then you have, even though it's ironic because the Wizards are the worst team, then Dinwiddie. And then kind of the Magic smattering of guys, whether it's, you know, Fultz kind of trying to ISO late game or them giving the ball to Vucevic or Fournier. Aaron Gordon, and now with the Nets, with Dinwiddie having COVID, and if he can't suit up, then the Nets pretty clearly, I'd say, drop to that last piece.
Yeah, I mean, LeVert, I would still put ahead of like anyone except Beal out of those three teams, but yeah, I mean, like, they already didn't have much margin for error, losing Kyrie and KD, Wilson Chandler. If they lose Dinwiddie, that's obviously another huge piece, and it would really just be like LeVert and Allen kind of running a two-man game. With Joe Harris.
Yeah.
I'll shout out Joe.
But it's, yeah, I mean, LeVert's had some success in late game situations, but I think especially when you're the Nets and you don't have a ton of offensive weapons right now, you can really key in on one guy, and LeVert is, he's not the most reliable shooter and he's not the most reliable one-on-one. So
he's just the only guy who would like be like, who I would trust to handle the ball, like if Dinwiddie's out
Chioza?
In a late game situation. I like Chioza, but he's so undersized, and like I would trust LeVert much
he's
more.
He's so
I
fast
would...
though. I don't know. Yeah. I love Chioza so much.
He's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He really is. I mean, and then looking at, I don't know. Let's look at some of these other team schedules. Orlando's I thought was tougher because you have the Nets, Kings, Pacers, Raptors, Sixers, Celtics, Nets, Pelicans. That does not seem good to me. That seems like a horrible schedule compared to what the Nets have.
Yeah, I think the same way I said the Nets had five like winnable games, I think the Magic have probably four with the two Nets games, the Kings and the Pelicans. I mean, there's teams like the Pacers and the Sixers who kind of struggled, but I think clearly have more talent than the Magic or Nets or Wizards do. So, yeah, I think there's a slightly harder, the strength of schedule is literally separated by like 0.1 in the metric, so it's like pretty similar to the Nets schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
I think because the Nets have more like top teams with the Lakers and or not the Lakers, the Clippers and the Bucks up there.
Yeah, it's so situational based on how the interim games shake out, depending on who's actually playing for things, who's not. So I don't know. I think it will be interesting to see how it pans out. And also, you have to think about how it's going to work with basically a neutral court for all teams, even at Orlando, even though it's, you know, basically in their backyard. All of these, like, it's kind of a blank slate on seeing how all these teams react to no fans, these weird, weird conditions that we're in.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see it.
Yeah, just a quick note that I saw on Twitter from Michael Gallagher from NBC. LeVert's numbers with Dinwiddie and Kyrie off the floor, 327 minutes. His per 36 stats were 31.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists. He put up a 37.1% usage rate in that time. So if Dinwiddie is out, we're going to see like a lot of Caris LeVert, which could be a good thing. Like if they're trying to make a case to like trade him and Allen or something, this would literally be like a showcase of just those two guys. So maybe that's like a possible bright spot to this. Maybe LeVert shows that the Nets kind of want to keep him long term. Who knows? But if Dinwiddie's out, he's going to have like a lot of attention on him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, any daily fantasy league, I guess those will be back up and running once the season starts.
Yeah.
LeVert, just throw the home at him. Him, Bradley Beal, Lillard, those three guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Marcus, before this Dinwiddie news, there was news yesterday of another Net that will not be, we know for sure, making their way to Orlando, and that is the Cardio King himself, Wilson Chandler. So in his first season with the Nets, he was a guy that was you know, had the 25-game suspension to start out, but then basically given the dearth of the Nets kind of forwards and Rhodey Kurets taking a huge step backwards, Torian Prince really underperforming expectations, Chandler became a really key guy for them this year, playing 35 games, 21 minutes per. No great shake statistically, but definitely a stabilizing force, someone that was relatively trusted defensively, and he just didn't feel comfortable with the situation in Orlando. You can't blame him at all for this, and he will not be making his way there. Obviously, has been extremely vocal in his support of Kyrie Irving as well, so I don't think this will affect him getting brought back by the Nets for next season. Obviously, he'll be an unrestricted free agent, but I'd assume that they're going to want his veteran presence back, given uncertainty at the four. But any big takeaways from the Cardio King not being there, just thinking about how much maybe he's going to Peloton while he's not in Orlando?
Yeah, I'm sure he will be doing a lot of that to stay in shape for next year. But yeah, looking at his numbers, like you said, nothing really jumped off the page. The biggest thing to me was, like, it seems like the defensive metrics liked what he brought to the team this year. And I think that was evident in, like, watching the games also. Like, he's one of the few guys who, like, has the size and speed to actually, like, guard what the modern power forward is. And without him, it's going to mean more Torian Prince, unfortunately, for you and I, Josh. But it's one more opportunity for Prince to try to show what he can do, show why the team brought him in and extended him, because he's really one of the few guys, like, physically who can play the power forward now for the Nets.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Yeah, I mean, I like Chandler at the start. I'm kind of surprised at how bad his numbers look, especially that overall field goal percentage and three-point percentage, and also lack of ability to get to the line, because in his Knicks and Denver heyday, he was a pretty good scorer. He was not all-star level by any stretch, but he was kind of just maybe a couple notches below that. And, you know, especially post-All-Star break, small sample size, 10 games, you know, 34% from the field, basically all of his shots were threes. He didn't really take anything inside the arc.
So Torian Prince should have no trouble replicating that.
Yes, exactly. Torian Prince is just looking at the 3.5 threes Chandler attempted per game. It's like, that could be all mine.
He said 30% from three, I can do that.
I can do that, no problem. I think the more interesting thing here, though, is, like you mentioned, you know, he was kind of one of the few guys of size and strength to adequately guard fours, even though it wasn't like he was prime Kawhi Leonard or anything like that. But, you know, with the Nets, I'd say very likely now going to be in the eighth seed playing the Bucks in the first round. You have a guy in Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, do you trust Torian Prince to guard him? The guy that seems like the by far the best matchup from the Nets side, and only matchup, really, when you look at this roster, is the guy that they just relegated to the backup center role, Jared Allen.
That's what I was just going to say, yeah. And then hide Prince on, like, Brooke Lopez or someone. Yeah, I would do that. Or, like, I mean, I haven't honestly followed his situation very closely, but, like, Rhodey Krugs is really, like, the only other guy who has the size to attempt to slow down.
But Giannis, he's not strong enough. He would get mowed over, as most people would be honest.
Yeah, he has the length, but he is very thin. But, yeah, I mean, Jared Allen... we saw, I think it was Philly or Boston, actually, with Al Horford guarding Giannis with, like, decent success. And so we've seen, like, a bigger guy kind of slow him down, since he's not going to operate a ton on the perimeter. He's going to try to just use the space that he's given, because people don't respect his jump shot very much, to get a head start and get, like, a couple steps momentum driving him to the rim, and then kind of use his length to hang in the air and finish around people. And with a center, and especially a center like Jared Allen, who is adept at blocking shots, like, that does kind of seem like it would be the best option that the Nets have to defend him. That being said, I'm sure in the playoffs, Giannis is going to probably be playing, like, 38 minutes a game. And Jared Allen sometimes struggles playing more than, like, 31. So they're definitely going to need a plan B. I'm assuming that'll be Prince, but yeah, not a ton of options. Like, even if it was Chandler out there, though, like, they still wouldn't have very many options. One thing, though, that does have a lot of options is Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They've got 16 amazing flavors, 8 a chocolate and nut combination, and 8 are nut-free options. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they are surprisingly soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health conscious person, and they can help to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber goodness. If you go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com.
Yeah, that's, I mean, they're just not at a point right now, given, you know, the poor roster construction, I'd say, on the role player side, and all the injuries, people not coming, COVID that they've had, it's getting pretty sparse when you just kind of project that rotation out, and we'll dive into that over the next couple weeks, plenty of time for that. But it's not a great situation in Brooklyn.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, they're... I mean, I'm sure they're not, like, locked into anything right now, but if they're considering, like, backing out of this restart idea, the NBA, I mean, just with... I mean, not that Dinwiddie's, like, any big star, but you mentioned Jokic has... Chris, like, I'm sure we're going to hear about other high-profile players. Marcus Smart, I think, had it. So, I don't know. I mean, as more... like, notable names pile up and more playoff rotations are impacted. Like, the Nets weren't going to do anything anyway, so losing Spencer Dinwiddie is, like, not the biggest deal if that is what ends up happening. But, like, what happens if, like, Eric Bledsoe gets it for the Bucks, who's, like, not the best player but is, like, very needed in that rotation? I just wonder what that's going to be like if and when that happens.
Yeah, listen, I think it's a really tough situation for the NBA. You could almost make the case that they're in too deep right now. And as I think we all know, this is about money and playing it at all, even with, you know, a diminished kind of roster, it's still going to be better than nothing for them. And I think it would really have to take one of these top stars, maybe in multiple. So,
yeah.
You know, whether that's Kawhi, you know, Giannis, LeBron, AD, a couple of these guys getting it or not feeling comfortable with it, to drop out, because guys like Kyrie, they were on, you know, he was on the Nets and the Nets weren't going to make an impact this year and he wasn't going to play anyway because of his shoulder. So
yeah,
it's just tough to for the NBA right now. I think if I was the one calling the shots, I'd say let's take a step back, and it seems like it's clearly not safe right now, but there's a lot of dynamics at play and it doesn't seem like there's any turning back as far as how they're thinking about it.
Yeah. A lot of rain coming down right now by me, so sorry to the listeners if you can hear that. But Josh just wanted to point out also that Dinwiddie did just tweet. He replied to someone named Dan Hanum at DHanumate, not followed by anyone I am following. But that guy responded to the Bleacher Report posting Shams's story. He said, "How would this affect the tokenized contract?" And Dinwiddie said, "Contract guaranteed, bro. We're good on this side." So. No worries if you're concerned about the tokenized contract for Spencer Dinwiddie.
That was my primary concern.
I'm sure. That, then health, then the Nets rotation.
Yep, absolutely. Those are the orders of importance here. So the Nets did make a signing, though, to replace Chandler. Justin Anderson, they had signed him to a 10-day earlier in January. He had come from the Raptors 905 G League team into the Long Island Nets. He's been in the kind of league for maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, but I feel like he's been on 10 teams at this point. Really good college player at UVA. Was on some really good teams there, and hasn't stuck in the pros, really. Was getting some time on Dallas, but I think overall his lack of jump shot and offensive game has really hurt him, even though he does have, I think by all accounts, some really nice tools defensively and a great mindset of being a defensive stopper. So, Marcus, Justin Anderson impressions from all your years of watching tape on him?
I remember liking him when Philly got him from Dallas, but yeah, he just can't really shoot, and it's not something that is like some guys cannot shoot and like it doesn't affect their game a ton because they don't really need to, but he takes... for his career, 47% of his shots, so about half of them, are from three, and he is a career 30% shooter from three. The one positive that I like about him is his size and his defensive energy. Maybe that can kind of replicate what Chandler was going to give them. Anderson is 6'6", 230, so pretty solidly built. A little short, but maybe he could at least buy a couple minutes for a guy like Jared Allen or someone guarding Giannis or guarding someone on the perimeter.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, that's the thing with him. You see some dudes who are 6'6", and, you know, he's an okay athlete. He's not the quickest, but you see some dudes who are 6'6", like a TLC, but they don't really have the heft to guard a lot of these guys. I mean, he is built like a tank, so he can really hold up. He's really strong. He gets after it defensively because he knows that's his calling card. As you said, it's just the lack of a three-point shot. I mean, going back to his seasons at UVA, he couldn't shoot his first 2 years, then was lights out from three that junior season where he was 47 of 104. So smaller sample size and obviously from a shorter line. But that was really what had propelled him to get drafted, you know, in the first round by Dallas and being the 21st overall pick. But, I mean, it's pretty clear that that was kind of an anomaly or aberration at that point because he hasn't been able to hit threes in the NBA. In the G League this year, he guns them up pretty frequently.
He shot well in the G League. Yeah, 37%.
He shot okay.
From
37% for the Nets, 33.6 for Raptors 905. So if you look at his career, he's at 35%. If he's able to translate that into the NBA, then he would be, I mean, that's pretty good. But
yeah, that's
really
like
no
a poor man's PJ Tucker. If he can if he can shoot 35% from three and like have the build he does and the defensive intensity, yeah, it can be like a poor man's PJ Tucker. But like without that, he's more like a poor man's Andre Roberson. So it's not
really
an NBA player.
And I think the Roberson, like that kind of comparison's apt because he's not like a big, he's like a good positional defender. He's not a steals or blocks type guy.
Right.
Because he's not that dynamic of an athlete and obviously limited height-wise for most NBA wings. But I think worth a flyer on, especially replacing a guy like Chandler. And the Nets certainly need someone of that skill set, even when they're kind of all at full health. They have a lot of guys who I'd say are more so offense first or okay defensively, but no real standouts. And you definitely need that because KD coming off an Achilles is not going to be – you can't look to him and put the burden on him to be that – guy really locking down you know top offensive scorers in the league. And even before his injury, he was more so a great help defender but not someone that was really going to get after it on ball possession after possession.
Right. So yeah, I mean, it'll be a great opportunity for Anderson, assuming he gets at least some of the Chandler minutes, and for Tyler Johnson if Dinwiddie is not able to play.
Yeah, whatever happened to Roberson? Is he still out with that injury?
I felt like he was injured for like what felt like two
three
or three
years.
Yeah, similar to like John Wall, where he's just like, I don't know. I feel like he's been hurt since like 2016, but that's probably not correct.
He didn't play this season or the 18-19 season and only played 39 games in 17-18.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, he really like hasn't played since like 2017, basically.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, wow. That is, that's interesting. I wonder.
Yeah, the last update I've seen is from February, where he was still working out with his knee. No timetable for his return back in February. So, who knows?
Yeah, people think KD is taking a long time with his Achilles. You can if it gets to Roberson level, I mean, we're going to be looking to run the guy out of Brooklyn. He's another year or so before that.
Yeah, KD's got a couple more years of this before it gets annoying.
Exactly. Marcus, I also hear the rain
coming
down. I got caught in it last night, which is not super fun.
I was out last night, or like in the early evening yesterday, and I kind of wanted to get rained on because I realized that I haven't like felt rain in like almost 4 or 5 months at this point. So I was a little bit hoping for it, but I missed it. So.
Ah, well, there'll always be another time. I'm quite sure of that.
Yeah.
Okay, Marcus, anything else that you have? I think it's good. Nice to have like news, you know?
Yeah.
It's not entirely negative. It's still mostly negative, but there's some things in there, some nuggets.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get more Dinwiddie information in the next few days, so maybe we'll update that next week or something. But yeah, I think that's all.
Absolutely. And you can find us at Locked On Nets on Twitter. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_. As always, please rate us and review us and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. We will be there. We love if you have us on your feeds. And until next time, be well.
Bye.